Welcome to the third series of the Reworked podcast, brought to you by diversity consultancy EW Group. I'm Rachel Wilson, Managing Director. While I'm on maternity leave, you'll be in the safe hands of our special guest hosts, who each fortnight will be speaking to CEOs, HR leaders, and workplace activists about the steps they are taking to reform and rework organisational culture.
Hello and welcome to the EW Group Reworked podcast series. I'm Lisa Jobson and I'm delighted to be joined by Reggie Nelson. Hi Reggie, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good stuff, very well, thank you. Reggie is a graduate analyst at Legal & General Investment Management and founder of K3D, a social mobility enterprise. And today Reggie's going to share with us his personal journey over the past few years around breaking into the world of work and building his current career in asset management. And it's safe to say Reggie has taken and employed quite a unique approach into finding his previous roles, and we're going to hear more about that. So Reggie, first off, can you share a little bit about your personal history and background to this point,
please? Yeah, sure thing. So as I sit here and talk to you, I am obviously in a suit in a building, but things were very different before that. So I used to play football, actually. I played football at youth professional, and then I played at youth semi-professional level. Mm-hmm. And football was a thing that I always wanted to do in order to sort of change the serendipity of my life, as it were. That was the thing that was going to get me and my family out of the environment that we were in so that we can have a better quality of life. Mm-hmm. And I think at 17 years old, that's when things changed for me. The goal changed a little bit, and I guess we're going to be diving a bit more into that later on.
Sure, yeah. Brilliant. Okay, so you took the decision to move away from football and pursuing a professional footballing career. So what happened next? What were the next steps that you took?
Yeah, so in regard to football, the reason why I wanted to pursue that was because I knew that, number one, I was fairly good at it, and number two, it could provide, like I said, a better quality of life. Mm. I grew up with two alcoholic parents, right. And my dad passed away at 17 years old, right. When I was 17, because of the alcohol. And that was the thing that sort of swayed my decision, because I was at a point now where it's either I do football, and if it doesn't work, then you know, we're back to where we almost started, or mm-hmm. I change up the strategy a little bit so that I can ensure that I provide that life for my family that I wanted to always do.
Right.
So I think that was the turning point when I was 17, and I sat down, I was halfway through my football contract, and I said, you know, what can I do in order to ensure that if I do have kids in the future, they won't have to go through what I go through. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the
main. That was your trigger.
Point. That was
it.
Trigger, yeah.
The trigger. Exactly. Okay. And did you at that point really focus or narrow your thought process to certain industry sectors or approaches that more tried and tested?
Not at all. My thought process was, what can I do that will earn me a lot of money?
Okay,
that
fair
was
enough.
The main aim. I just wanted to build capital.
That's, right.
That was it. So I wasn't really focused on finance or marketing or engineering. It mm-hmm. was just, what can I do to amass wealth? And that was the thing that I started to do. I started to do research in Google of the wealthiest areas in London. So I typed in Google, wealthiest areas in London, and the list of areas came up. And I remember noting down Kensington and Chelsea and Bishop's Avenue.
Right.
There was three other places, but I can't remember at the time. And I wrote it down on a scrap piece of paper. And I said to myself, I'm going to go to these areas. I'm going to ask these people what they did to amass their wealth. Mm-hmm. Because I knew that they had some sort of skills and qualities. I just had to find that so that I could almost extrapolate that for myself,
yes.
Use it, and hopefully one day become as wealthy or even more wealthy.
As them. Right? Yeah.
And that's what I did.
Okay.
One Saturday, I went to Kensington and I started asking random people in the streets what they did to amass their wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And people weren't really stopping to talk to me at first.
Yes, what kind of response did you get from the first couple of conversations you had?
The first thing I noticed was a Starbucks. I'd never been to Starbucks before.
Right.
And I was like really hungry when I got there. And I went into Starbucks and I saw a sandwich was like £5.50. And I was like, no way a sandwich is £5.50. I walked straight back out. And I was like, okay, there's a clear dynamic difference from where I'm from to where I am now. And that was the first ever sort of encounter with Starbucks. But I think the main thing that people were sort of saying was like, people just won't stop in the streets.
Right.
So I'll try stop them on the streets and just say, hi, can I steal 2 minutes of your time? And quite understandably, people were like, oh, I don't have time, or I'm good, thank you. Or because it's a bit, looking back at it, it is quite weird. You know, a young man, I wasn't dressed, you know, particularly smart. I was wearing jeans, trainers and a jumper.
Yeah. Weekend attire.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Coming up to someone and asking them what they did to amass wealth is, so many question marks must be running through your mind. So
yes.
I completely understand it. So the reception wasn't great at first, although someone did give me £40.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so it was a guy, he was getting into his Aston Martin.
Right.
And I obviously saw the Aston Martin. I walked up to him and I said, sorry to bother, you know, what skills did you have that's allowed you to afford this car?
Yes.
And he gave me some great advice. I still remember it until today. He said, he owned an IT company.
Right.
And his best advice for me was to take education seriously, get experience abroad if I can, and just work hard.
Very good.
Afterwards, he gave me £40 for saying, you know, you seem like a decent young man, here you go. So, you know, asking people on the streets was great, but, you know, that didn't really give me the tangible advice that I wanted. Of course, I was £40 richer, but £40 would have come and gone.
Well, that's it.
Exactly.
Easily spent.
Exactly.
So what happened next? Was that your that was your first attempt?
Yeah.
And then did you take stock and...
Yeah, so I did that, and because I wasn't really getting the tangible advice that I wanted, I then decided to go and knock on people's doors.
Okay.
So I was going street by street, knocking on people's doors, hoping that someone would open a door and I could ask them the question, what skills they had that's allowed them to live in this house. So I did that, and I knocked on the door of a lady, and she invited me into her house. And I walked in, sat down, and she was talking to me and asking me why I'm doing what I'm doing. Initially, she thought it was part of a school project.
Right.
But I said, no, I'm by myself. I'm doing it off my own back. And her husband walks in. And her husband was Quinton Price. And at the time, Quinton was the head of Alpha Strategies at BlackRock.
Right.
Which is the largest asset management company in the world.
Mm-hmm.
His role was similar to like a CIO, so chief investment officer.
Right.
So he sat me down and I started to explain to him why I'm doing what I'm doing. How I'm on the football contract and I don't really want to play football anymore. And that's when he said, you know, he will go back to work on a Monday and see if there's anything he can do to help me out, be it an insight day or anything along those lines.
Yeah.
So he took down my email address, and on that Monday he emailed me and said,
brilliant,
would you like to come for an insight day at BlackRock just to see what it's like?
Yes.
It's an undergraduate insight day, so you will be the youngest person here.
Yes.
However, I think it will be a good exposure into what is available for you if you, you know, do work hard, etc., etc.
Great. So that first opportunity literally came from knocking on the right door, as it were.
Yeah, literally.
And I think it's probably safe to say that you haven't looked back since.
No,
in
not
that
at
respect.
All. Not at all.
Okay. So the Insight Day at BlackRock. Talk us through that. How did you feel when you walked in the revolving door, as it were?
So my first day at BlackRock was the Insight Day, and that was my first time in the city, actually.
Right.
So I live about 25 minutes away from the city of London, but I never stepped foot in the city.
Right.
So I sort of had to create my own image in my head of what the sector was like. You know, I know that these people wear shirts and ties, but I don't know what shirt I need to wear or whatever. So I went to buy my first shirt, my first tie, I went to buy shoes, and I went with my mum and my sister, actually.
Yes.
And we got all the stuff, and I went there, and it was a whole different world. I didn't know how to behave or act. I remember so vividly, I had these fake pair of glasses. So they were glasses, but they didn't have lenses in them.
Right.
And I thought, you know, I'm going to this building, I think people are going to be smart, so let me wear glasses to make myself look smarter than I am. And I walked in with glasses, and I said, I can't wear glasses all day, so I'm going to take them off. And I got there an hour early, so I had time to sort of digest everything and look around and understand what I was sort of getting myself into. So, you know, the first day, that Insight Day, it was a steep learning curve.
Right.
I didn't understand a word of what was going on.
And I'm sort of was that the jargon, the kind of corporate speak?
Yeah, just, I mean, I was around undergraduates, so they had done their A-levels, they are in university, they have a sort of an idea of what they want to do, and the caliber of students that I was around, you know, when you go there, you have a name badge and you have the institution that you study at.
Oh, okay.
And I just kept seeing Oxford and Cambridge and LSE, and I knew what Oxford and Cambridge was, but I didn't know any other institution. Yes. And
so intimidating in some
respects. Very, very intimidating. Because when I saw that, I started to question, well, what grades did you get at A-level? And they were openly telling me, and they were saying, oh, I've got A-star, A-star, A-A. And at that point, I kid you not, I didn't know that you could get an A-star at A-level. Mm-hmm. It was a completely different world to me. And I was sitting there thinking, okay, this is for me, but I genuinely don't think I'm smart enough to be here. Mm-hmm. And that was my thought process on the first day.
So there was some self-doubt.
A lot of self-doubt.
There was just feeling almost on the outside looking in a little bit. Yeah,
100%. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. So, I mean, after that day, I messaged Quinton.
Yes.
And I said, thank you for the insight day. I really enjoyed it. And I managed to get a week-long work experience in that summer.
Brilliant.
To sort of dive into more of what I was learning on that insight day.
Mm-hmm.
So this time around, I'm a bit more aware of what like investment management is, and I started the insight day and the work experience, and I remember turning up this time fully prepared. I had like my briefcase and I tried to look smarter than I am, and you know, I sort of picked up on some of the things that I did wrong on my first insight day. So I did that for the week and I really enjoyed it. I saw myself as, you know, this could be a career for me, and I was really fortunate because I had Quinton, who was arguably the most senior person in that building, you know, helping me and guiding me and showing me the ropes and stuff. So, you know, I was quite lucky to have that. And
No, I was just going to say, you carved that situation out for yourself, didn't you, if you think about it?
I mean, now that I sit here and I think about it, I mean, a lot of it was down to the actions that I took, but I own a great deal to the people that supported me to get to where I am today. So I'm really, really grateful for that. But after the work experience, I had a meeting with Quinton, my mum, and another employee called Nathan Higgins, who I'm still in great contact with today. And that's when Quinton encouraged me to go to university if I wanted to be the most competitive candidate going into the sector.
Right.
He didn't force me to, but I genuinely asked for his honest opinion. I said, if I wanted to work in this sector, what would you advise me to do?
Yeah.
And that was his advice. So university wasn't something I was ever going to do.
Right.
Never wanted to go to university.
So another first.
Another first, yes, exactly. I never saw myself as academically bright, because when I was playing football, and when you play football at the level that I was playing at, it's all eggs in one basket. There's no emphasis on education or having a backup. It's you're going to play football and you're going to make a success of it. But
until somebody tells you otherwise.
Exactly. Yes. No one ever tells you that one injury could end your career. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's a game of opinion. So if you do play under a manager that doesn't really like your playing style, that could be over for you.
Yes.
Well, you just think, I'm really good at this, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
So university was never an option for me. But after speaking to Quinton, and obviously my mum was there as well, I decided to go to university.
Right.
I didn't do the usual UCAS application thing properly, so I had to go through a process called clearing.
Clearing, yes. So,
got the results, and I started to call random universities. Never been to an insight day, university insight day in my life.
Yes.
Never been to a university in my life. I'm calling these universities saying, look, do you have anything finance related that I can study? And they were saying, yep, we have this or that. And I managed to go to Kingston University to study economics.
Great.
And I saw on a website that Kingston did a thing called a language scheme.
Right.
So I decided to study a language alongside my degree, and I picked Mandarin.
Right. So not only were you taking a big leap into further education, higher education, but you then decided to tag on quite a difficult language in the mix. So you've set the bar very high for yourself there, I think.
Yeah, the reason why I picked Mandarin is because I knew that if I was going into this education game, as it were, I needed to do something that really helped me to stand out.
So you're looking at the differentiators.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And I said, what is the most complex language on this list? I saw Russian, I saw Mandarin, and I said, I'm going to do Mandarin because this is supposedly harder than anything else.
Mm.
So economics, Mandarin, university at the beginning was the steepest learning curve I've ever been on in my life.
Mm.
It was so different.
Right.
And I remember the first exam we did, we had an exam 3 months into university, and I thought I were advised for the exam. Mm. You know, I opened the books and I took notes and I tried to prepare myself for the exam. I scored 25%, which is a fail.
Right.
And it was like a U. And I remember we had to go to our lecturer's office to pick up the papers. So I went to pick up my paper and he looked at me and said, Reggie, this is not good.
Right.
So I got the paper and I went home. I was on the train. I was just thinking to myself, you know, I actually revised for this exam, and I wasn't lazy. I didn't just turn up and hope for the best. I genuinely tried for this, and I probably got one of the lowest in my economic cohort. And I remember that day, I said to myself, I'm not gonna continue this university thing.
Like, right, so you questioned, yeah, you questioned 100% yourself. Questioned.
And I was so close to dropping out and saying, okay, what else can I do in order to get to my end goal? But I sat down and I just said, you know what, let me give this my all, and I'm really gonna whack it out of the park. And the next exam was 3 months later.
Yeah.
So I lived in a library, studied every day.
Very good.
Really immersed myself in my degree, and that exam I scored 82%.
Very good.
Which
well
is
done.
A first class.
Yes.
And then 84% in an exam after that, another first class. And I
so you really hit your stride, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, I started to understand what studying was and how to do it, because before that I was training every day, but for football. So I had to,
different type of focus
is,
and emphasis,
it is,
isn't it? Yeah.
It is a big, big, big difference. And once I sort of mastered the studying element of things, I sort of found my stead and
good.
Ran with it. And yeah,
excellent.
University was great in the end.
And if we fast forward, obviously you graduated from Kingston with an upper second.
Yeah, 2-1 in economics, yeah.
Fantastic. Congratulations on that. And as you say, we're sitting here at L&G and you've established a career for yourself in investment management, asset management.
Yeah.
So tell me about what... You know, if you think about what you've achieved in a relatively short space of time and the emphasis of the job that you're working in now, did you ever think at any point in time, similar to your degree, that I'm not going to get to that point?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes, because I did receive a few setbacks during university in regard to my end goal of working in a sector like this,
right.
Investment management. So during university, I was fortunate enough to do several internships. So I applied for the spring week at BlackRock. I got that and did one at Aberdeen Stanley Investments, which is a competitor to BlackRock. I did an internship at a hedge fund, and then I went back to BlackRock for the summer internship.
Mm-hmm.
So I was all over the place. I was really proactive in regard to finding internships and gaining experience ready for when I graduated.
Yeah.
And I remember the summer internship at BlackRock. When you did a summer internship, afterwards they either give you the offer so you come back,
yes,
and you're a full-time employee,
yes,
or unfortunately you don't get the offer.
Yeah.
And unfortunately I didn't get the offer for the graduate program, and to me that was the last hurdle. Once you get over that, you go back into your third year with a job secure
and you know you're safe and you can really focus on getting the degree.
Exactly. Yeah. You just have your degree to focus on, as opposed to traveling to XYZ firm every week for insight days and applications, etc, etc. And when I didn't get the offer, I remember receiving the call, and I was, it's almost like something was sucked out of me. Because I technically went to university just so I can go and work for this firm.
Yes,
right? And,
yeah.
And you know, I thought I gave my best, and I really tried, and you know, it's just how it works. And I'm a big believer in everything happens for a reason anyway. So looking back at it, I'm completely fine. But at the time I said, you know, I'm not good enough for BlackRock. And I started to have doubts about myself. Was can I actually enter into the sector? Can I do it?
Yeah.
Do I have the right capabilities? So once I graduated with two offers, one at a tech firm, well, fintech firm, and one at a consultancy firm. And I went to the fintech firm. So I didn't actually start off in where I am now,
yes,
in asset management. So I thought, let me try something different. So I was at the fintech firm, and within 6 months, I said, this is not for me.
No.
I know what
you
I...
You knew where you wanted
exactly,
to be.
Exactly. I knew
where
I wanted to be. I knew what I was good at. So I started to apply myself a bit more and started to get my CV out there and stuff. And I found myself in Legal & General, BlackRock's biggest competitor in the UK. And doing exactly
the irony of that lost.
And yeah, I'm doing exactly the same work I was doing at BlackRock.
You're doing there. Brilliant.
So it's all worked out in the end. But to answer your question, yeah, there was an element of, you know, self-doubt,
yes,
after graduating.
Okay. So... You know, your experience for somebody of young years and what you've gone through to get to your current situation, how are you using that now, Reggie, to help others around you, both inside of L&G, for example,
yeah,
but also out there in the wider community?
Yeah, so in regard to the platform that I'm fortunate enough to be given, L&G, I... lead mentor the Socioeconomic Mobility Committee,
right,
which is helping young people from a socially disadvantaged background gain visibility to a sector like this. So that they know, you know, I can aspire to be here if I want to. Because that's something that I was missing when I was growing up.
Yes.
Didn't have visibility to this. I had to go and knock on doors in order to know that this was a thing.
Almost to have that insight to this sector.
Exactly.
And the city, which, as you say, has been on your doorstep all of your life.
Exactly, but never.
But you've never had the opportunity exactly. to understand it.
Exactly. So I lead the mentoring for that.
Great.
I have a social enterprise called K3D.
Yes.
It stands
Tell
for...
us a little bit more about that.
Sure. So K3D stands for Knock the Doors Down.
Right. Very good.
It's got like an urban twist to it.
Yes.
And the reason why I started that was because I... Once I broke into the sector and, you know, I did a project with BBC and mm-hmm. I was in the news and newspapers and I started to do some commercial work.
Mm.
A lot of people started to find out about me and my story.
Yes.
And I started to get tons of messages about how do I do this, or parents asking about their son. They want their son to break into this sector, or, you know, what advice will I have for XYZ? And it became quite exhausting replying to everyone, because I genuinely wanted to reply to everyone and help everyone. But
you're holding down a full-time job
exactly,
as well, and you're building a career.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I thought, what can I do to... I guess I wanted to create something where I, you know, kill several birds with
yes.
one stone. So I started K3D. And
right.
K3D is a mentoring service where
okay.
I offer my mentorship to young people from a socially disadvantaged background
okay.
and help them to break into the hyper competitive sectors like consulting,
mm-hmm.
investment banking, investment management, etc.
Right.
etc. So I offer one-to-one mentoring, application advice, CV advice, and the end result, if they get into a job like this or they
mm-hmm.
start something that is fairly entrepreneurial, then I've sort of done my
job. You've given them, as you say, the platform to build
exactly.
their own success.
Exactly.
And how many individuals would you say you mentor on
any one point in time? I can look after about 10.
Okay.
I do it in conjunction to a youth organization in East London.
Mm-hmm.
And we have about 60 young people in that space.
Fantastic.
But me personally, I would have about 10 at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And does that join up with the program that you're chairing here within Legal in General in any way?
Yeah. So some of the mentees that I have, I've managed to get them work experience here.
Great.
So the young people that I feel can, you know, being exposed to this will do them a world of good.
Mm.
I am managed to get them work experience here so that they can experience what I experienced
mm-hmm.
at their age.
Mm-hmm.
So that week-long work experience I did, that Quinton helped me
yes.
to sort of see what it was like. I'm effectively being their quote-unquote
Quinton
to them.
To open the door.
Exactly. So
Fantastic.
Just opening the door for many young people. So yeah, it's in conjunction to what I do here as well.
Yes, yeah. And how does that make you feel? Does that give you a great sense of satisfaction, I'm sure?
Yeah, no, it's really, really good. Being able to help those people, because I know what it's like.
Mm.
Right? I know what it's like when visibility isn't really that clear to you in regard to what you can do.
Yeah.
And when people come to me and say, oh, I don't know what I want to do, I really resonate with that. So
mm.
when I see that someone has a genuine desire to change their life, as it were,
mm.
and you have you can have a part to play on that,
yes.
it is it's such a great feeling.
Yeah.
Seeing them go and sort of chase what they want. I mean, I had someone who I was mentoring, and he's a graduate,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted to break into like consulting, and he came to me and he said, oh, Reggie, I've gone to so many interviews and I keep getting to the interview stage but keep falling at that last hurdle.
Right.
He doesn't know what's going on.
Yes.
And I remember telling him to come into my office and we'll sit down, we'll go through it, I'll record you so you can see where you're going wrong and what you're doing really well.
Mm.
And some of the things that he wasn't able to see, I was able to point out to him.
Yes.
And we just went at it for such a long time, a couple of hours, just helping me. He was helping me as well, but
yes.
more me giving my mentorship to him.
Mm.
And within 3 weeks, I kid you not, within 3 weeks, he had two offers.
Fantastic.
One at a top four accountancy firm,
mm-hmm.
and one at one of the largest investment banks in the world.
Wow.
You know, he's enjoying his life now.
Yes,
and
exactly.
doing what he wants
and
to do. And
you've helped him on his way.
Yeah,
that's
I mean,
fantastic.
Those little things that you can do are really intangible. So
yeah, definitely, definitely. So what's next for you, Reggie? Clearly, there's the career that you're building and your
yeah.
success here at Legal in General. And then your second job, as you describe it,
yeah.
with K3D and all the people that you're helping.
Yeah. So I have a long-term plan, mm-hmm. and my plan is to make a success here or in the industry.
Yeah.
My plan is to build as much sort of capital as I can in mm-hmm. order to, so I can focus on the things that I think about on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
So things like sociability, equality, mm-hmm. and helping people that can't help themselves.
Mm.
So I don't know whether that is within, I can use finance to do that,
yes.
or I might go down the politics route.
Right.
I don't know
okay.
where that's going to take me, but at the moment, it's just, I'm enjoying what I'm doing now,
good.
So making a great career here.
Yes.
And you know, I'm writing a book as well, mm. so.
Brilliant, we'll look forward to reading that in due
Thank
course.
You. So that's
and so from a final question really for me is, you know, as one individual, not only have you dramatically changed your personal outlook mm. and future prospects, you've also single-handedly supported many other people and they've gained benefit from that. If you think about the companies that you have had exposure and experience of, obviously Legal & General are clearly very supportive of you know, your very clear principles
yeah.
and I suppose causes that are very close to your
yeah.
heart. What more can organisations, not just in the financial services investment management sector, do to support a higher or greater degree of social mobility within their talent pools and,
yeah.
and intakes?
Sure. From a grassroots level,
mm.
one thing they can do is, I call it cast the net further.
Right.
One thing I saw when I was fortunate enough to intern at some of these firms was that I was one of the only people from a non-Rush Group university.
Right.
And in regard to that, Rush Group universities are great, and I have nothing against those
mm-hmm.
Institutions. I think if someone can get into those institutions, then great. But we do need to think about reasons why some certain people don't go to those institutions. Like some people either choose to go to university late and
mm-hmm.
they're not able to have that personal statement that's going to wow these institutions, or
yes.
they might not be able to travel to
yeah. or live
England,
locally.
Or live locally.
Yes.
Or, you know, there's so many different factors that contribute mm. to that. And I feel like some institutions focus on those pool of institutions and they miss out on the wider talent that
yes.
is across the country.
Yeah.
One of the things that I hear, which is quite humbling but also quite inaccurate, is that we need more Reggies. And I hear
right.
that a lot of the time. When
right.
I go to other companies to talk or
mm-hmm.
when people hear my story, whatever, they say, oh, we need more Reggies. And it's a great thing to hear, but very inaccurate because there are
mm.
tons of me out there.
Yes.
It's just that they haven't cast the nets to
yes.
grab those.
To find
those individuals.
Or make themselves accessible to those individuals.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. And on that point as well, when I was at Kingston University, over my 3 years, we didn't have one FTSE 100 investment bank or asset manager come
to the university.
To the university
right.
and hold a workshop or
right.
an insight into, or to hold a session on what they do. And across the 3 years, if you're not exposed to that, then you're automatically going to think these institutions don't hire people like me.
Yes, of course.
We had the local accountancies come and talk to us. We had the smaller firms come and talk
mm.
to us. But we never had the firms that we all aspire to work for.
Yes.
And my friendship circle now that I went to university with, we are all working in similar institutions.
Mm.
We've got one at a large investment manager, tech
mm.
firms, investment banks.
Mm.
So we could, it shows that we can get to there.
You had the caliber and the capability to get there.
Exactly.
But felt that perhaps it was out of reach.
Exactly, it's out of reach. And to us, we had to work that little bit harder because
yes.
we didn't have that visibility to it.
Yeah.
So in regard to changing the social mobility sphere, I feel like if firms are able to cast net further and look for a wide range of talent, because you'll be so amazed at the talent that is on show.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say away from these institutions, but also in those institutions, we need
yeah.
to be able to grab hold of everyone from everywhere, as opposed to saying, oh, we recruit from these three institutions, that's who we're going to focus on. Because you miss out on real and diverse talent elsewhere as
mm.
well. So.
Fantastic. Reggie, thank you so much for sharing your personal story and also all the great work that you're doing to support others who find themselves in a very similar situation.
Yeah.
And best of luck with the career ahead.
Well,
we
you.
Look forward to the book when it launches.
Appreciate it. Thank you very
thank
much.
You very much.
I hope this episode gave you some ideas that you can replicate in your own organisation. We'd love it if you could leave a review and also subscribe to Reworked so you don't miss our next episode. Diversity and inclusion at work has never been higher up the agenda. The EW Group team includes learning and development specialists, facilitators, researchers and analysts, all with deep expertise in equality, diversity and inclusion. If you think we can help you rework your own culture, please get in touch.